Hello and welcome to Kith and Tell, a podcast about kids in the hall that has survived rehab, I guess. We will be reviewing every episode with witty banter and unmissable segments like Renaissance of Kevin, The Summer of Shriek, and I don't know, does this hold up still, or some shit. Mostly do I know other people.
We're so sensitive.
I'm Stuart Derekotic, and I am in Victoria, Canada, because my life is a fart. I am joined by Kalina McCordoffi in London, England.
The beard stays, you go!
Trevor Record in Vancouver, Canada.
Delia!
And Hansi Sides in Vancouver, Canada.
Essen is beef tank?
Hey!
Dirt's kind of meat.
Ooh.
So we are back in, breaking in episode 1, season 5, which aired on, for you, Hans, October 5th, 1994.
I saw that you put that in the notes for yourself, Stu, and I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud.
Friendship!
That feels like a weirdly late time to start a new season, doesn't it? Doesn't TV usually start in September? Or is that school?
Look, they were groundbreaking in many ways.
Groundbreaking like us by being incredibly late with a new season.
Yeah, yes. Jesus. How long has it been?
So let's... it's not my fault. So let's start with our sketch rundown. We've got the cold open, Idiot Boy, the assistant. He doesn't wear a shirt.
Does wear a tie.
Yeah. He does
there
wear
were some
tie.
Nip slips.
Blasted nips.
I think it's like only one arm of his coverall is on too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They sure.
Yeah, only one nip is slipping. The other nip is just like, it's
protected.
Proud.
For listeners at home who don't watch the show but do listen to us, so Ricardo.
does Ricardo not watch?
No, he does watch. He's a thorough boy. I don't know who this is for. I don't know why we do this. But Scott comes out rocking a tie, no shirt, and a coverall with one arm on and one nip. But I will say, Scott does one of his better Scott acting things, which is like really committing to an uncomfortable bit. Yeah. Like he goes hard.
His jaw movement is very, very good. He's acting the hell out of that jaw.
He really is. Oh, yeah, it's probably because he's got a little experience clenching that masseter. So number two, we got cops. Interrogation one. This is a recurring bit they do actually over two episodes. This bit comes back in the next episode, which is weird because then it's like, oh, not only is cops filler mayonnaise, but let's have it span over a couple of epis with one joke.
It's the worst.
It's not that bad.
It's not the worst. This is one of the better cops, but it's just a lot. It's a lot for one gag. Where you got to get the critical interrogation skills of, did you kill that guy?
Yeah.
That is some good bruising, I will say.
And I feel like adding Scott in kind of spices it up, you know?
His laugh is so annoying.
It is, it's
he
bad.
He has this, like, demonic cackle. Yeah. Yeah, it's the thing I hear in my nightmares when Kalina's featured in there. Then next, we have Filiat, featuring Netherlands Foots Choir. This one is so weird and wonderful. I think we should probably just talk about it like later. But yeah, inexplicably we can't figure out what language. We assume German, but we've been trying to translate it with our robot slaves, and it's not been going great.
No. Nope. Mysteries.
Mysteries abound. So then we have back to cops. We interrogate him again. Is this the one where he has the TV, or is that next?
Who cares?
I think this is peer pressure with the Siggies. Perhaps. Or maybe that's the third one. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, one of the things I love is later...
Boy, these sure are forgettable, am I right?
Yeah. I like that they have a circle back with this one where they're like... they try to peer pressure the guy into confessing to murder through peer pressure. It's like, oh, I guess it only works for cigarettes. And then later they're all smoking for the rest of them, which I think is kind of funny.
That is good.
And then we have catching up. Where we got a good double drag situation with Dave and Kevin.
Yes.
And Kevin is very concerned about his old female friend having gained weight and lying about it.
Oh my god. Oh man. This is a real
it's
thing
a weird one,
about eating
but
disorders.
Kalina loves it.
I have many things to say.
Yeah. Then we come back to cops, which I'll avoid so Hans doesn't explode. And then finally, the beard.
Wait, you forgot Fran.
Oh, I forgot Fran. Yeah, there's Fran because there's a long Scott monologue, which...
Brian got arrested.
For soliciting.
It's dumb.
I just hope he doesn't show up on one of those cops shows or sketches.
Oh, that's actually
cool. I think we're not going to talk about it, but there is this one line in there where she says, like, oh, you know, the way they used to deal with this would be, like, to beat you up behind a shed. But she's like, we don't have wood sheds anymore. That's why everyone gets beat up at the mall.
Yes.
I do love that. It's like, oh, got to keep that in the backyard.
Yeah. Oh,
malls
boy.
Are the 1980s modern day wood sheds.
Yes. Yeah, and then finally the beard, which is one of my favorite sketches that we have.
What?
It's so good.
We're just excited.
I'm just excited.
So Kalina's our only non-bearded person.
Well,
people, but if Kalina had a beard, what kind of beard would she have?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think she would have one of those, like, kind of weirdly shaped ones where she then has to style it so that she has, like, a very long, wispy chin beard and, like, just long, wispy, like a Fu Manchu kind of thing, you know?
I think it'd be one of those, like, braided Viking beards.
Oh, yeah.
I think she would have a soul patch for sure.
Oh,
she definitely would be one of those people that doesn't have, like, her sideburns don't really extend very far, so there's, like, no cheek to kind of jowl
the hair.
Jowl. And,
the thing is,
Stu, I think I'm convinced that she would have the soul patch like the he's hippies coolies 55.
Mm.
Like I think that soul patch, yeah.
It's such a shame, and I'm so sorry, Hans. You're in this category, but like it is so hard for blonde / mousy haired people to have a good looking beard. It's rough. It's rough out there.
Yeah, it's tough.
Tough out here for pimp, and by pimp I mean kind of gross looking alternative person. one of the things we should jump into, it's a new season, that means new title segment, new season, new year, new you.
Yes.
It's just, Kalina was very excited about this, so what do you gotta say there, K-Town?
You know what, I think it's because I was so disappointed. Was it last season where we got some colorization?
Yeah, and we had all the drag queen party thing.
Yeah,
I work in colorization, like, but I don't agree with it. Yeah, and I thought it was disgusting. Yeah. I don't know. I felt like it was trying to be more modern, whereas the thing... I know it's hard for us to judge now, because for us it is retro, blah, but what I like is that they came back to it. I like that they had kind of these, like, multi sort of screens overlaid on some movement on the background. It's all black, mostly back to black and white, mostly. Yeah, I don't know. I felt a bit more comforted by this one, and the last one was just so jarring that I think I almost puked.
Wow.
I do. I darn near puked. I love that you guys were so bent out of shape about the, like, they're filming it at a party. Kids in the Hall isn't about having a cool party. It's about standing on a street and maybe on a bus.
Yeah, I don't want anything coherent. I want, like, random shots of street life. I don't want to see people having fun.
It's about Scott's pregnant friend who kind of looks like Bruce.
That's what we're here for.
Looks a lot like Bruce. I don't know. So the thing that Kalina was so excited that it was a return to the, you know, nostalgia, because she dies if anything has changed ever, which is why she's chained us to this project for the last 5 years.
So many years.
So many years. Oh, actually, though, I love you guys. But the thing I hate about this is it's a fucking montage. It's montages of previous ones, and that's the worst kind of
nostalgia.
No,
there's new
stuff.
Content
there's
in here
snippets.
For sure.
There's snippets, but it's not OC.
Okay, sure. But there's that one, like, I think my beef with this one, whereas I found last season's a bit much, but it grew on me weirdly over the course of the season. So this felt like it, like, tame by comparison in retrospect, but there's one bit in this one that is novel and new, and it's like, just as you're saying, there's a lot of, like, small overlays and kind of like almost collage style. Mm-hmm. And then at one point it switches to full screen, like, dude in some sort of bondage gear doing a weird dance alone in a dimly lit room. And that was like the one bit of kind of edge to this title credits bit where I was like, ah, that's pretty good.
I also think it's really funny that you guys were like, they're trying to be cool. They're going too big budget, and it was, like, just clearly a warehouse they rented out for one night and, like, maybe threw a camera around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it still looked incredibly janky.
I know, but I think the whole point which we made last season was that one kind of made you feel like an outsider because they're all having fun. We want, like, our disjointed outsider outcast kind of show to turn to, not like, oh, these guys are now famous and they're having fun without us, you know?
Right.
The party did look fun. I wanted to go to the party.
Envy, see?
I like that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I like that there were real couches there. I feel like there's not like a lot of good couches.
What would be the alternative?
No, it's not. No, it's not. When you go to warehouse parties, it's just like weird
metal bar chairs.
The seating is poor, okay? And I'm really excited about my lumbar support.
My lower back.
My thoracic.
This milk crate is doing a number on my L5.
It is. I have spinal compression. The seating is important. I'm laying in bed at my parents' house. That doesn't sound good. No, I'm in the basement. I'm in my own bed, but the Wi-Fi is weird, so I'm all tucked in. So, yeah, I'm clearly the expert on such things. Let's do segments. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop talking now. Summer of Shriek. This was, I think, every good part of this episode was Kevin, because we have Filiat, which, yeah, I was, Kevin is very bad at pretending that he knows other languages.
Yeah.
But I would say that Filiad is a Kevin sketch.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
And then there's the beard, which is just a gold standard in weird format ones.
It's so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, a little shout out to Bruce as the supporting role in the beard.
Yeah.
Because that's some good Bruce-ing.
I'm certainly not a skank.
You're so full of beans.
Oh, Don, you're so full of beans.
So beanful.
So beanful today. And the cutaway when they discover the horrific ending, which we won't spoil because it's only been 30 years. But the cuts for the scream, and then there's a pause, and then he screams again, which is just great.
Yeah.
And Kevin is in Catching Up, which Kalina liked inexplicably. So what do you think the best sketches here?
Yeah.
And why is it Filiat?
you think Filiat is better than the beards, too?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just want to say something contentious so you'd pay attention to me.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Got it.
Well, can we just, the premise of your bit here, Stu, I think was like, this is the Kevin Renaissance, right?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, I think we are all thrilled with these sketches, and it's all, we talked about it last season, whenever Kevin does Kevin-heavy bits where it's not about Kevin being self-deprecating, those are the ones we love. And this is like three sketches in a row where Kevin is not like beating up on himself, and so they're great. That's what we want. Thanks for thanks for taking the note, Kevin, and delivering, going back in time to deliver us.
He invented time travel just so he could go to the future, listen to our podcast after the episode's like released. He'd get our feedback, then travel back in time. Okay, so less of me kind of navel gazing, more of me being weird and shrieky. Got it, guys.
Yeah.
Maximum Shriek! I think this is some of the beard is some of Kevin's best acting, I think.
Oh, yeah.
By far.
I've given the beard 5 out of 5. Like, I actually think this gives Kevin's, or sorry, god damn it, Drunk Dad, what's that? Whose party is that?
Kevin's.
That's why I keep thinking it's Kevin's birthday.
Chad's birthday. Chad's 13th birthday.
I feel like this comes up against that because, again, if we go back to the rubric of would I show this to somebody, this is great. It's really well structured. It's got sort of like the, you don't just end with him kind of having lost the beard at the end when he throws himself off the 4th floor of a building, but you've also got the beard curse at the end where Scott has gone on the fishing holiday and talks about growing a beard. It's well rounded, it's circular, and you just, like you said, you get Kevin at his best kind of playing off Bruce in a way that's both surreal and really confident. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There are little parts that I really like when Kevin has the beard and he's watching, I don't know what he's watching. It looks like he's watching like Species or something. Like,
I've never seen
it. It's one of those like late night not porns that are.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That are porn. Yeah. You've never seen Species, Kalina?
No.
That seems like exactly the kind of thing that would have informed your sexuality when you were younger.
Softcore sci-fi. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like technically a movie that wasn't porn, but it was just porn. It was like there's an alien and she needs to bang.
Right. Okay.
So that takes the form of a sexy lady and then bangs people and then kills them or something. And there's like 8 of them.
Yeah, she just goes around being naked, banging people, and then eating them, I think, or something.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Nothing. I was doing nothing.
I love the way he shrinks behind the chair, just in like full Kevin avoidance. But there's something about when he, before he gets caught, he's watching it and he's eating with very Canadian branded beers behind him, which I appreciate.
Oh yeah, he has a Pacific Pilsner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Old style E. Pilsner. And he's stroking the beard going.
And it's just like very greasy food. It's like Chinese food or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he's rubbing the grease into the beard. Like, there's, I was going to say, there's a real masturbatory quality to the way he strokes that beard. And the fact that it's greased up only enhances that.
He's having a beard wank.
I like to think it's
sure.
like he's eating, but he's also like feeding the beard. The beard
yes.
on its own needs to consume.
Beard's yes.
too tight.
I like the idea that he's using like chicken grease as like argan oil for oiling his beard.
Yeah, you gotta buy that for $35 a bottle now in hipster land.
When his boss finds his glasses and he's like, I don't need them now. My eyesight's getting better. I'm getting better. And then he just does a bunch of muscle yeah. poses. And like they zoom in on his face and he's just like, it looks like he's taking a real hard shit. Like he's just like.
It's, a difficult shit.
Yeah. Just the strain, like every muscle in his body is tense with beard.
And I love that it cuts back to Mark's business lady, and she's just sort of perturbed by the flexing. Like they don't fire him at any point. Which
yeah,
seems...
early on when he just sort of leaves in the middle of a meeting saying he needs to get steaks and beers. They're just
and
like, guess he thinks he's still on vacation.
Yeah. Oh, remember when the economy was like this and you could. Not get fired.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
It is incredible. But then Filiad is great because it's just, when we first watched it, we thought maybe it had been improperly dubbed or something, or like we kept waiting for the joke to be, oh, Daryl will be here and will like point out that it's in a different language and it'll be fish out of water. And it's not. It's just all in this maybe made up European language.
And then also a news bulletin interrupting it with sharks in the Rhine River.
Disaster un Rhein.
Yeah, zum Rhein, yes.
And I also love that when you get the question wrong in Filiad, when you feel incorrect, feel not neige, they put a bucket with a sad face over your head, which I think should be one of our costumes.
I agree.
In terms of like sketch construction, I think the fact that they have Scott feeling the pineapple,
mm-hmm.
and then they cut to the news bulletin, and then they cut back, and it's just Scott has a bucket over his head, and like the construction of the sketch where you immediately understand, oh yes, that's the punishment you get for it. Like they show him with the bucket before they show them putting the bucket onto someone. It's just it's so well done.
Love the audience too. The audience is so into the show.
Oh yeah, good audience.
When we were watching this, it cuts to the audience and they all look vaguely Teutonic. Like they all have mm-hmm. glasses and turtlenecks, and we couldn't decide if that was intentional to look European or if it was just the 90s.
I think that there were like vague notes, like this was their studio audience for that day, was told you have to show up like wearing one of the following six things, and it's like maybe they even handed out plastic horn-rimmed glasses kind of thing, you know?
I did like that all the audience knew the gestures to do and did them in unison too. Like the big like pump up hand thing, whatever that is.
We've been doing that really consistently.
We really have.
Over here at Kith.
The thing, okay, so we get, I know we've been debating this off audio, but as to whether Scott's old man character is not only the man who ran an antique shop, but also sausages.
I know.
Father.
I feel like the sausages guy, he lives in his own little universe. He's not a part of this.
But maybe Filiad Hans grows into sausages.
Oh, I hate it.
It's the timeline.
That's a gross mouth.
Yeah, it is. But I also, there's one point moving on from Scott where like Vanya, the hostess assistant,
mm-hmm.
carries the little boy over to his podium as if he can't do it himself.
Yeah.
It was great. I just really like that.
She does put a bucket on his head, though, and I love the way the little kid's head like dips down and the bucket hits the counter of the thing because he's such a small child.
That kid is a baby Hans for sure. Little fancy boy.
And
yeah, it's definitely Scott is the Hans, the soldier boy guy from the original. He's obviously in the Daryl universe, so it's got to be that
Darylliverse.
That's and Scott, they win a
Daryl is so he's so excited to win the potbelly pig.
A potbelly pig in a little wagon.
Vietnamese potbelly pig.
Wait, did it say Vietnamese?
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And then the whole audience like pushes their nose up with their thumbs and goes.
Yeah, that's the grand prize, the major award.
It's so good.
It is really great that we're like, regardless of whether it is a real language or kind of a made up mock of some European mashup of German and Dutch or whatever, it's amazing that they can get so many laughs in something that isn't necessarily slapstick without actually having any real lines.
Mm-hmm.
I think also one of the things that makes this sketch so funny, and I'm curious who you all think were the writers on it. Like, it feels like because it's a Daryl sketch that it was maybe Mark wrote it, and it gave Kevin a vehicle because it's like very much a not usual Kevin character. So I think that's partly why Kevin is so great in it. But part of the thing I think that makes the sketch work so well is that it. You're constantly waiting for the joke. Like, mm-hmm. You keep waiting for the sketch to turn into something else. Or, like, because we know what the kids in the hall are like at this point. Like, it's almost like it's baiting us into thinking that it's another one of those, like, well, that was a, you know, screw you taxpayer sketch or something like that. And then it never comes. And it's almost like a meta joke in that, like, it's waiting for Kids in the Hall fans to, or it's making Kids in the Hall fans wait for the joke. And then it's just not giving them that. And it's like, no, this was the joke all along. Joke's on you.
I really think this was a Mark sketch because it's very character based and kind of like just the Mark absurdism too, you know, how he just, he likes to just do kind of weird stuff like this. And like in some ways, like I'm kind of like thinking Mark probably had more opportunities to go to different countries and experience the fact that different cultures are a little odd compared, like in our eyes, kind of too. You know, like he was the son of a diplomat. I'm just thinking that might be a Mark thing.
Speaking of screw you taxpayer, they built a whole ass soundstage just for this one bit.
Well, I figured they must have just been doing it on their regular, like, in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, but they built the podiums. Those are special podiums, Hans. That would take a Hans a whole year.
Props to props.
But I know.
It would take an old Hans a whole year, for sure.
If we're debating who wrote it, kind of based on experience, this also just made me think about that one Kevin sketch where he's teaching accents to an acting class. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
You gotta use the hands.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be either one. Probably a collaboration.
Collabs. Well, speaking of writing, do you think that the beard was written by Bruce? Because that one screams Brucio nonsense.
Interesting. I was thinking this is sort of unrelated to that question, Stu, but sort of. It feels like a much better version of the Dave Chocolate sketch from last season.
Which one?
The chocolate bar.
The beard
sketch.
The beard is a improvement of it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like
I was feeling like it's kind of like in the same ballpark as the My Pen sketch, you know, where it's just like a man's obsession overtakes him, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But far less repetitive.
Yeah. It does feel like I think it feels like a Kevin sketch. I feel like I can give Kevin full credit for the beard.
Yeah.
Well, has Kevin ever done anything Twilight Zone-y like this? Because
My pen.
Well, because when Dave comes in at the end, he's clearly doing a Rod Serling impression.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I also love at the end when Scott comes in the beard and he has the fish and he's just like really acting the hell out of pretending he's caught this fish.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. He gets to do his aggro bit again. Which, as we discovered, is actually just who he is.
Yeah.
He yells at wildlife
all
the time.
Scott is an alpha male. He probably... he would just... Yeah, he would just be into... I don't know. What are the alpha male things now?
I don't know. Big dog?
Truck nuts!
Incredible.
Oh, he'd probably... you know what? He's probably really into, like, creatine smoothies of various kinds, you know?
Oh. That's what gave him... Nope, don't do that joke. Okay, so let's move on to, does this hold up? Because Kalina wanted to yell about catching up.
I did.
Oh.
Yeah, so catching up is insensitive, but it also is funny, and it's a very specific depiction of a very particular brand of neuroses. So, as token girl, how are you obsessed with your weight?
Oh,
how does this reflect in
But I think that's why this... It wouldn't be able to be made in this way today, but I also don't think it would necessarily be as funny if women did it because it is too close to being so close to reality, which is sort of fucking depressing. But you also couldn't have men do it now because it would seem like it would be taking a jab at
punching down.
Yeah, at women who struggle with weight. I mean, all of us fucking have body issues, but this is just done so well. And the fact that it's, you know, she comes in and is immediately into how much did you weigh 6 years ago? Oh, you've forgotten? Let me tell you. And how much do I weigh?
125. You said it was 125. I thought it was more, but you said 125.
Yeah.
And being like, I weigh 108 pounds. It's like, no, you don't. A thin 11-year-old girl weighs 108 pounds. Like, I know. So like wistfully. Oh my God.
That's such a good one. And then brings the scale.
Scale. And when the waiter brings the menu, it's like, who put you up to this? Who sent you here? And it's good.
To Kevin's credit too, gets on the scale in heels and totters out blindfolded in the heels, which is good. That was good heel toe walking.
So what is it you think in particular would make this not 100% hold up, other than it being performed by men though? If it were done by like, say, Baroness von Sketch, would it not
hold up? I don't think it would be as funny. It wouldn't be as funny if it was performed by women, because I feel like it's just so close to reality. It's like sometimes I feel like because you have to be serious enough to not punch down, but so absurdist. You just can't. I mean, eating disorders are absurdist in and of themselves, but I feel like you couldn't. I don't know how you'd make it funny.
I mean, the kids always, like, they've done a bunch of sketches in very, like, in smaller pieces here and there that have, like, poked at that idea of, like, women being sensitive about what they eat or women dieting and stuff. Like, there's always the Kathy's.
Yes, yeah.
The cheesecake one, yeah. And, like, there are always, so many Kathy sketches are like, oh, I had a muffin. I'm on my cheat day, though. It's okay. And it's like, I think it was a trope at that time. And like maybe a mine for comedy that people used a lot back then. But I just don't think that trope is in the culture anymore as a funny thing so much as it is like, oh, actually that's a problem that we're trying to stop now.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we've had, like on top of the cheesecake sketch, we have this one, but then also the liposuction one, which was a bit harder to digest in many ways.
Just like all that fat, am I right?
Kalina, do you feel like the absurdity, like the over-the-top nature of this one makes it more palatable?
Totally, yeah. And like, I mean, touching her hand, I mean, like, you're getting your fat cells on me. Like, it's fucked up because, like, I have friends for whom have had, like, extreme bouts of anorexia and have had been like, freaked out if someone like touched these special cookies that they made that like they had specifically figured out like how many calories you could have in it. I myself have struggled with eating disorders, so I speak from here. And like, it's, I guess that's the thing, is like, as someone who themselves has struggled with shit like this, like I realize I don't speak for everyone, but I do find it funny in a retrospective way. Again, I wouldn't be able to see this funny now, probably.
Yeah.
It also does seem to be like, I mean, at least in terms of its target, it does feel like it's appropriately, like, because I mean, the Kevin's character is very extremely obviously like fat phobic sort of thing, and it is very clear that she is intended to be the butt of the joke. So it's not like endorsing fat phobia. If anything, it's like punching at fat phobia. But but the vehicle for that is also someone who is like very clearly having an eating disorder, so that's not a great target either. You know, so it's like it's a tragic figure, not a comedic, whereas in the past people might have thought of it as a comedic figure. Now it's more of a tragic figure, I think.
Well,
empathy bones us again. do we want to wrap this bad boy up?
Well, I want to talk about the idiot boy bit.
Okay.
That also, I didn't. I think in many ways, almost that holds up even less.
Oh yeah,
well.
I agree.
And it's just like, you know, it's unfortunate because the construction of the bit is good. The premise is totally workable. But they actually even have the same costume and everything as Scott's yokel kid from the barbershop sketch, the storytelling sketch. But and in that sketch, he's like, he's kind of a dumb yokel, but it's not like very clearly someone who has like severe learning disability or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he basically is like nonverbal just takes it too far and definitely does kind of make it feel like it's poking fun at people with disabilities, as opposed to just like, oh, he's a hayseed from the Hicks who's never learned how to send a fax and doesn't know a stapler from a typewriter. You know, that that would have made this work. And before we recorded, Trevor asked if whether a caveman would work. Yeah, that would totally work too, right? But they kind of punched at a real person, it felt like.
But
you know?
The whole humor here, though, is that Dave's character totally does not see who the problem obviously is in front of him. And it's sort of like the boss that will not see that the clown is the one spraying seltzer kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see the fact that he's like clearly a nonverbal, mentally handicapped person is.
Well, and you look at where the audience laughs, and it's like it's pretty much always when Scott is like groaning or, you know, doing like Scott acts the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. And like, you know. Begrudging respect for that, I suppose, but it's like, but that's what's getting the laughs, and so you're like, it feels uncomfortable to watch now because you're like, ooh, that's not so great, you know.
The real problem is society.
But again, like he's done that character as just a hayseed yokel, and it's been fucking hilarious. And I think if they had done that here, like it would have worked perfectly. His visual kind of style is so perfect with his like. Both nips out, no collar, but a tie just around his bare neck, like over his overalls. Like it's a great look. Everything about this sketch works. Otherwise, I feel like
I like the interpretation that it's like it's actually a criticism of corporate America about how you incompetency is rewarded.
Yes, yeah, the Dunning-Kruger effect. Yes,
there you go. Yeah. I think the caveman is the obvious solution. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that too. They've certainly done it before. Or Tarzan. They did Tarzan,
but Tarzan became actually like very competent within the workforce. Whereas I think in this case it would just be he's a caveman. He doesn't know how to. He's trying to like build a fire. You know.
Yeah. Put like an animal skin in place of the overalls. Keep the tie, and you've got a winner.
There you go. Cryonics saves us all. What's your second? I think we all kind of agree that Kevin is the best in this episode. So, Kevin, who is your second best kid?
Scott.
Yeah, I was going to agree. I know not everyone like loved Fran, but I thought it was a decent monologue.
He was also good as the old man in Feliet. He did act the heck out of Idiot Boy.
He went for it.
He really acts the heck out of old man too.
Yeah, he does, and at the end of the beard, he acts the hell out of the next guy that's going to be cursed with the beard.
True.
And as much as hate the cops, he added a little bit of spice to the mayo, so I was fine with it.
Wait, was he in every sketch this whole episode?
I'm just looking at it. Like Scott was in every single sketch. Yeah, he was in everything. Yeah.
Wow.
Because he did martyr on himself, the Fran one on it by himself.
But was he in Fear of Fat? Was he the waiter?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're right. Not.
Caught you there, Trevor.
Okay.
Mentally, he is always the waiter.
Okay. I would be willing to bet if we looked through all the sketches that followed the 100th or 1,000th waiter role thing that he did, they probably stopped giving him those roles because he was probably making a stink about it.
Yeah, that sketch was probably be like, stop costing me as waiters, guys.
Can I quickly check something? So in the cops interrogation where he gets the TV, are they playing, is that Royal Canadian Air Force? I feel like I've been gone too long to
remember.
Yes,
it's Royal Canadian Air Force. Yep, that's exactly it. Yep.
Love that, CBC.
Man, it's weird to think that Royal Canadian Air Force was concurrent with Kids in the Hall. It seems way older.
Yeah. Do you think that was something the kids chose to put on there? And 100%. If so, were they taking the absolutely. Piss?
I am sure that they wouldn't go on record on this, but I would be willing to bet that they thought that Air Farce was lame and uncool.
I mean, that's why I think the joke is when Scott says, hey, can we get cable? It's like, I don't want to watch this schlocky CBC comedy, which is especially funny considering they are on the CBC.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Gotta get those subsidies. Government cheese.
Those taxpayer funds.
Yeah. Well, that was a very consensus based epi, you guys. Well done. We're all on the same page.
We all are, you know, in a good place and agreeing with each other. And this is the season of friendship and health and
healing.
Wellness. And
I'm immediately uncomfortable and want to destroy it.
Yeah, this is not where everything falls apart.
Yeah. Uh-oh, hubris. Speaking of that, that's it for episode one. Join us next week for episode two. This will be hosted by... Who wants to host it?
Sure, I'll do it.
Trevor. It'll be hosted by Trevor.
This is how we make decisions now.
we got sophomore, actually not sophomore, senioritis right now, don't we?
Senioritis. Yeah. Meantime, you can catch us on Twitter at KithAndTellPod. Hans will be in the gift mines, where he belongs. Weigh in on your favorite sketch. Enjoy some delightful gifts. Our legacy. Thanks for listening to Kith and Tell, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Go get me a belt from the Gap and bring it back to me.